Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mingleson, and I am joined today with Caitlin DeStair, and we are going to be bringing you an episode in our What's Brewing series. So this is a series all about mission and different ministries that congregations and mission centers and individuals are engaged with. And we are going to be talking about the Mom Project, which is something that Caitlin started up in Canada. So I don't want to give too much of it away. So Caitlin, I will just throw it over to you to explain a little bit more.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brittany. And as I was just saying to you in our conversation before, I'm really excited to be on the podcast. I'm a little bit of a fangirl, so this is really exciting for me too. So I live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and I have been a lifelong member of Community of Christ. I briefly attended Edmonton Congregation when I lived there as a very tiny, tiny child. And I was at the Lethbridge congregation for a couple years while I was in university, but pretty much my whole history is in Calgary. And the reason that I'm here today is we're going to be talking about the MOM Project, which is the acronym for the Mother's Own Milk Project, which I started a couple years ago to help moms with babies in the NICU who need access to low-cost breast pump rentals. So it's kind of a niche market. Not a lot of people know much about the NICU. Not a lot of people know a lot about breast milk and why it's important and things like that, but it's something that has become a big part of my life, and so I'm really excited to chat about it.
Yeah, and as I was telling you in our little pre-recording chat, when I first encountered Parker Johnson, who's now a good friend of mine, and we've had him on the podcast as well, I kind of did little internet Facebook stalking, as one does, and just kind of checked out his congregation and what he does. And I remember distinctively seeing this project featured on the website. And I was really intrigued because I'm a NICU mom. My girls, I have twins, and they were born 4 weeks early. We were lucky that they only had to spend 4 days in the NICU just while I was recovering from a C-section. But I was really young when I had them, and I didn't know anything about babies or hospitals or breast milk or any of that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I was just so naive that I wasn't necessarily an advocate for myself. I didn't know what resources I had available to me. I actually have a lot of regrets about that time in my life. Yeah. So to know that there's a church, there's a congregation that is actually helping connect moms with pumps was huge for me to see. And, you know, we always think of, I think, when we perceive mission and what that should look like in congregational life, I've literally never heard of anybody doing anything like this. So, yeah, it's something that I've been thinking about for years, ever since I found out about it. And I'm sorry to say, but I didn't realize that it was you that had started it. So
that's okay. That's okay. And like you said, it's not something that you really envision congregations being involved in. It's really something where if I wasn't involved in the NICU so intimately, like, this never would have come about. So first of all, I should probably define what the NICU is. Mm-hmm. So that's the neonatal intensive care unit. So essentially where all of the sick and small babies go that can't go home from the hospital right away. And I work at the Foothills Medical Center, which is the only non-surgical level 3 center in Southern Alberta. So that means that all the really sick babies who don't need surgery come to my hospital. So we see babies all the way from 23 weeks that weigh less than a pound, and a normal pregnancy is 40 weeks. So they're 17 weeks early, all the way up to term babies that may just be having trouble with feeding, or maybe they've had some sort of birth injury or something like that. And so now they're in the NICU and they need some help. So I'm a registered nurse, and I've worked at the Foothills NICU for just over 5 years now. So the reason why breast pumps, especially hospital grade breast pumps, are so important to moms in the NICU is because they don't have a healthy baby that is breastfeeding every 2 to 3 to 4 hours when the baby is first born. So a hospital grade breast pump means that it's powered electrically. So it's not a hand pump. It can pump both breasts at the same time, which is best for milk supply, and it provides a decent amount of suction. So all of these things combined together make it so that the pump can actually initiate and sustain the mom's milk supply while the baby is in the NICU, because basically what she has to do is trick her body into thinking that she's feeding a baby every 3 to 4 hours when really she's pumping. So you want a pump that's going to be able to emulate what the baby would be doing at the breast as closely as possible, because the baby in reality isn't, for some of these moms, isn't going to be feeding at the breast for maybe 3, 4, 6 months at least. So you have to have the, it's really a piece of medical equipment. You need the piece of medical equipment to help the moms provide their breast milk, and they need it right from the get-go. So they, we encourage moms to pump within the first six hours after delivery. And then we encourage them to pump every 3 hours during the day and every 4 hours overnight until the baby is breastfeeding as a normal newborn. So same as any newborn mom can tell you, those first few days you're up like a million times during the night. These moms are also up at least once a night pumping overnight. So these moms are working really, really hard to get their breast milk. And if they don't have access to these breast pumps, then their milk supply, usually within about a month after the baby is born, their milk supply will dwindle and then eventually go away, because the breast milk supply is driven by nature's supply and demand system. So if the baby, or the pump in this case, isn't fully emptying the breast, then the breast is going to think that it needs to make less milk next time. And so you get that signal over and over and over again that we're not using all of the milk that we're producing. Then eventually the body's going to say, hey, you know, mom just had a baby. Things are pretty stressful around here. Like, we're going to save some calories. We're going to save some energy and some nutrients and not waste it on breast milk, because what the body thinks is that the baby's weaning, or maybe mom doesn't have the baby anymore, things like that. So we really need to have this piece of medical equipment to help these moms be able to establish and maintain their breast milk supply until their baby is fully breastfeeding. And how the Mom Project kind of came to be was one day, I'll never forget it, because this baby had the smallest hands I've ever seen. She's not the smallest baby I'd ever taken care of, but she had the smallest hands, and the palm of her hand literally fit on the top of my index finger, and her little fingers could curl around it. Like, she was so small. And her mom was telling us that she was pumping every 3 hours, but we weren't getting any fresh breast milk from her. And fresh breast milk is so important for NICU babies, for premature babies, for so many different reasons. And we can talk about that more in a bit. But this mom said that she was trying really hard. And so eventually I asked her, what kind of breast pump are you using? And she said, well, I'm just expressing the breast milk with my hands. I don't have a pump. And so I said, oh, well, I'll go talk to the social worker, because there has to be something out there, because this mom said she couldn't afford a pump. And I talked to the social worker. She said, no, unfortunately, this family doesn't qualify for any sort of cost relief or anything like that. But you could maybe call around and see if any of the pharmacies who rent the breast pumps do reduced rates or anything like that. So I called at least a dozen pharmacies, and several of the public health centers, and all of them basically said, like, nope, we don't have any way that we can help. And so I suggested to her, like, maybe contact your church and see if they could help subsidize a rental for you, because the cost for an appropriate breast pump rental is $70 to $150 a month. And so for families that are in strict financial situations where they don't have any extra money, that's not really doable for them. And I just was really shocked that there wasn't anything that was already set up for these families, because while it's not super common to be in the NICU, in Alberta, the statistic is actually 1 in 8 babies will need a stay in the NICU. It's really common in Alberta for some reason. And so I was really shocked that nothing had been created for these families. And so I was thinking about it and thinking about it, and like, who could I talk to? Who could I get to make this happen? And then I just kind of had this realization one day of, maybe I'm supposed to make it happen. And so then originally I approached my pastor, who is also my stepdad, but I promise there was no nepotism happening. But So I approached him, and originally I was like, well, what if we just sponsored these moms and covered their breast pump rentals? And he's like, well, that's going to get pretty expensive pretty fast. What if we found a way to invest in our own pumps and have our own rental systems? And so long story short, that's what we ended up doing. And it started off, I made a formal proposal to the congregation for, you know, this is the amount of seed grant money. This is how we'd like to start and all of that. And we started in March of 2017, and we've been going ever since. We started out with 6 pumps. We now have 40. We've done over 100 families that we've helped, and that's over 120 babies, just taking into account multiples and things like that. So we've done a lot in the last couple of years. So I won't talk about absolutely everything right now, because I'm sure that you have lots of questions and stuff. But yeah, it's been a wild ride.
The listeners can't see my face because this is a podcast, but my eyes about flew out of their sockets and they started tearing up. Again, this is something that means a lot to me. And that is a huge amount of families that you have been able to help. I mean, and I really appreciate that. It's your stepdad, right? You said stepdad.
Yeah.
Okay. I really appreciate that your stepdad was able to take this idea, and together you were able to figure out a way to make it sustainable. And mm-hmm. why don't we just buy our own pumps and figure out a system that way? I mean, what a way to use your resources and make your resources stretch.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how you sold it to the congregation. I mean, cause like we've said, this is kind of an uncommon thing. It's not really something that the general public pays a lot of attention to. Mm-hmm. And yet it's deeply meaningful and has a huge financial impact for families, health benefits, et cetera. So I'm just curious what it was like when you proposed the idea at the very beginning to your congregation. What was their response?
Yeah. So in Calgary, we are really blessed to have a lot of people that are very forward-thinking, think outside of the box, open to new ideas, things like that. And I was also really lucky when I was 17, I went to Honduras with World Accord, which is a development agency that is very closely related to our church, and lots of members are involved. And it really taught me about the simplicity of what makes a good program. And part of what makes a good program is meeting people where they're at and attending to their needs, looking at the barriers and eliminating those while not overcomplicating things. And my mom was on that trip with me. And so she was an invaluable resource for me to kind of think about this in a way that was going to be sustainable right off the bat, or at least like be able to get on its feet and not need a ton. So we really had it all kind of figured out before we even pitched it to the congregation. So I was thinking about, okay, what are the barriers that these families face? So a big one is transportation. So right off the bat, we knew that we were going to have some sort of component of delivery. And also language was going to be a huge barrier too. So right from the beginning, we knew that we were going to have translation services, because it's a different pump than the ones they use in the hospital. So we couldn't just drop it off and be like, here you go, like, just use it. We had to explain it to them, and also how to take care of it. And we also get them to sign a contract. And so of course it's really important to have someone understand when they're signing a legal document. Maybe not everyone thinks that's super important, but I do. So then we thought about that. And then we were also thinking about transportation in terms of sometimes these moms have to take the bus for 2 or 3 hours to get to the hospital. So how do they keep their breast milk safe once it's been pumped? So we include cooler bags. So what they get, I should have brought one to show you on camera. I can grab one after. But what they get is a plastic bin with their pump in it. And then they also have a cooler bag, an ice pack in there, and all the accessories to make it compatible with the pumping kit they already get in the hospital. So the families don't have to buy anything extra. And as the program, we also have the minimum amount of investment to make it work per user. And then my stepdad suggested that I make a formal proposal instead of just like bringing it up in the news and needs 1 week. So I wrote out this whole proposal and addressed a few different points. And one of them was going back to the mission initiatives of abolish poverty and end suffering. And so if you can get a mom to breastfeed, which is free, essentially. If you can get a mom to breastfeed, you can save her potentially thousands of dollars a year on formula costs. And there's nothing wrong, like right off the bat, I want to say there's absolutely nothing wrong with deciding to feed your child formula. If that's what works for you, if that's like what makes the most sense in your family, if that's what you're able to do, absolutely feed your child. But in a situation where you can breastfeed, it's the easiest thing to do in terms of finances. It's the easiest thing to do in terms of storage and preparation. And when clean water is sometimes an issue, we have a lot of mums. In Alberta, we don't necessarily have as much of an issue with mums coming off of like Aboriginal reservations having issues with potable water and things like that. But in parts of Canada, in parts of the States, like that's an issue. So if you don't have clean water to drink, how are you going to provide clean water for your baby's formula? But anyway, so it's just one more way to help interrupt the cycle of poverty is to not force these families into a situation where they have to feed formula. It's well known that people with lower socioeconomic status often choose to feed formula because they don't have long maternity leaves because they can't afford to take them. They have other children in the house. Their education level might not be as high, so they don't necessarily know the benefits. They don't necessarily have the social supports, because I think that any mom who has breastfed knows that it's super important to have people around that are supportive of that. So that was kind of how we pitched it, was this is a way for us to impact our community that's not proselytizing, because that was a really important thing to me as well, because I think that when you mix the organized religion part of it, that's where you can sometimes create a barrier. And like I said, it was important to eliminate all of those barriers. So it's always been very clear that this was sponsored by the Community of Christ. It was funded by Community of Christ and all of that, but there's never been a point where we talk about the church in any other sort of function, because what we're really providing is a health service at this point. And so what I did was I first sent around this proposal in an email to everyone, and then we had a business meeting vote on it. And I was shocked at the emails that I got back, because most of the points that were critical were just making sure that the congregation was going to be safe. Like, is there going to be a contract so that the congregation's not liable? Like, are these breast pumps, like, have you researched them well? Is the, what's the infection risk? Things like that, like really practical things. Nothing being like, this is weird, we're a church, like, why are we talking about breastfeeding? But everybody's been super supportive and super positive, and like everyone's just really excited about it and has always been super excited and supported about it. And I was as nervous as anybody to bring it up, because I was like, I recognize how like odd this is and how out of place it is, but I was just really pleasantly surprised at how supportive everybody has been.
I'm so happy to hear that. I assumed that you would have gotten some sort of pushback or...
No, not at all, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's really, really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So with your job, how do you, I guess, advertise this? I mean, is it mostly for the hospital that you work with or you work in? Is that your main clientele? Or, I mean, how does that whole process work?
Yeah. So the way that we started it was Doug, my stepdad and pastor, really wanted us to start as a one-year pilot project to kind of work out all the kinks, figure out all the bugs, get the system really perfected before we decided whether or not we wanted to expand to all of the NICUs in Calgary. So there is 5 NICUs in total in Calgary. So we started at Foothills because I work there, because I have close relationships with the other people who work there, of course. And so because we knew right from the beginning we were going to have limited resources, because it literally was just me and my mom when we started. And I work full-time shift work, and my mom works full-time, like Monday to Friday, but still it's full-time. So we knew that we were going to have to be very efficient about how we did this program. And so what we came up with was that the lactation consultant and the social worker on the unit would identify these mums as being in need. So they would, so what our criteria is that the baby's going to be in the hospital for more than 7 days, and that the family doesn't have any other way to offset the cost of a pump, and it would be financially burdensome for them to rent a pump the traditional way. So then what happens, when we first started, what we would do is we would give the families a pamphlet and they would contact us. So my mom got many voicemails of these poor dads who are trying to help out their wives, and they would say, hello, my name is such and such. I need a breast pump. Click. And so we're like, okay. So then we would have to call people back and like try and guess what's going on and like figure out whatever. So now that was one of the kinks that we kind of worked out. So now we have a referral form that the lactation consultant or social worker fills out with the family. So we have all the information. We know if they need translation, things like that. So we do most of our business, I guess you could call it, at the Foothills Hospital, because that's where most of the babies that fit our criteria are. The babies at the other hospitals, they're level 2 centers, so they're for babies that don't need as much medical intervention. So usually those babies are born closer to term, and also it has to do with the demographics of the city. So in different areas of the city, of course, you have different income levels, different class status, things like that. So the other hospitals that we're in, we are catching any of the babies that come from those lower socioeconomic status areas at the Foothills Hospital because those babies are born so sick and so little. Whereas at the other hospitals, we're not catching them because they're born bigger and their parents have more means. We have one more hospital in Calgary to expand to, and that is in an area of the city where there is a lot of financial need. We are not able to go there yet just because our volunteer base isn't quite big enough, and we know that we're going to be super busy with that hospital, so we want to be able to have enough infrastructure to be able to do it, because the worst fear, I think, when you start a new project like this is you don't want to get too big for yourself and then kind of collapse. So we're kind of going with a slow and steady approach, but I would say like over 90% of the babies that we serve come from the Foothills Hospital. They get transferred out to the other hospitals eventually, but they all pretty much start with us.
So you mentioned infrastructure, and now I'm curious, what does the infrastructure look like? Who do you have working on this project? How do all the moving parts work together to make it a success?
Yeah. So when we first started, like I said, it was just me and my mom, and we started as a project of the Calgary Community of Christ. And then after we'd been doing it for about 6 months, then I was speaking to one of the gentlemen in the congregation, Sam Smalden, who has tons of experience in nonprofits and societies and things like that. And so he and I sat down, and he kind of gave me the advice that this is something that eventually we want it to spread its wings and kind of fly and be independent. And the best way to do that would be to found a society, which in Alberta can mean a nonprofit. It can mean a for-profit company. We, of course, are a nonprofit. So after many iterations of a name and trying to figure out all that different stuff, I found a group of 5 ladies who are awesome, who make up the board of the Ohana Support Foundation. And any Disney fans out there will know that Ohana means family from Lilo and Stitch. It's Hawaiian for family. So that is the foundation that we started in order to kind of bring the Mom Project to a different level. So we are now officially independent from Calgary Community of Christ, although 95%+ of our funding has come from Community of Christ Calgary. And they are certainly one of our biggest partners, and we are so proud to be so closely affiliated with them. But now we are our own independent legal entity. And so the Mom Project is a program of the Ohana Support Foundation. So we have 5 women on our board, including myself. So it's me, my mom, Cindy, and then Michelle, who's been my best friend since we were in university together, and she's done lots of volunteer work. My friend Christina, who's also a Community of Christ member, and she and I have been friends since she was my babysitter when I was a baby. And then Jules, who I work with, and she just said to me one day at work, she's like, well, if you ever need help for the Mom Project, like administrative stuff, then let me know. And so here she is on the board, and she's one of the most like organized, cool-headed people that I know, and she's just been a really great addition. So that's kind of the steering force behind the Mom Project. And then we have underneath that is our rental coordinators. So they are the ones who receive the referral forms from the hospital, and then they contact the parents, get some information from them, and then they text out to our group of volunteers, and we have, I think, 11 volunteers at this point, who then can volunteer for the drop-off or the pickup, and they can meet the families either in their homes or at the hospital that their baby is staying at, again, to eliminate that transportation barrier. So then that's kind of how it goes. So the LC or social worker identifies the family, send the referral form in, the rental coordinator gets it, talks to the family, texts it out to everyone, and then the volunteers then coordinate with the family to do the drop-off. They explain how the pump works, and then when the family is done with the pump, then they contact us again, and then we text out again who wants to go and pick up this pump, and then the pump comes back to us, we refill it, restock it, clean it, and then it's ready to go out to the next family. And peripheral to that, Marilyn Roche, a member of the Calgary congregation as well, she had a neighbor who was a bit of a shut-in, a bit socially isolated. Her name is Hannelore, and she was knitting prayer shawls for us, but she was making them a little bit too small. And so Marilyn was trying to figure out how she could put these projects to good use. And so she said, well, what do you think about them being donated to the moms from the Mom Project? And so that gave birth to this whole other part of it that is a baby blanket ministry. So we have people inside and outside of the congregation who provide crocheted and knitted baby blankets. And like that has been this whole other incredible thing, because it's a way for people to be involved that is feels meaningful to them, but it's not as big of a commitment. And there are so many women who are like, oh, I'm just like knitting dishcloths. I'd much rather do something that's actually going to benefit someone. And that was something that I had never even thought of. So that's just another way that it's kind of like gone on its own path and connected people in lots of different ways.
I'm sitting here, quite frankly, just stunned. I mean, I did not realize that it was this big of a thing, and that it was this organized, and there were this many people involved, and you've created something that, I mean, I'm just stunned. I don't even know what to say.
You're very sweet.
Well, and if this is a rude question, you can just tell me to buzz off, but I'm curious how old you are.
I just turned 29 last week.
See, and that's amazing. So I don't know. I think that sometimes people who are our age kind of get a bad rap as far as church life goes or community service, et cetera. But the fact that you have been able to do this kind of as a side hustle, because you're also a full-time nurse, just, this is just great.
Thank you. Yeah. I was raised by parents who really felt like it's important to give back, and if you see an issue, then you need to fix it. And the Calgary Community of Christ is in a very unique position because of the fact that we don't have our own permanent facility right now. We're not tied down with that, which a lot of congregations are. Just managing a building can be hugely taxing on people's time and budget and all that. And so we're in a really unique position where we don't have those commitments. And so we're able to look at things kind of outside the walls and what's out there, what could we be doing? And yeah, if I didn't do it, nobody else was going to do it. And sometimes I think that that's maybe not the best way to live your life in terms of looking after yourself, but it's a good way to look after other people and the bigger world out there. So there's that, I guess.
No, it really is. And I think that it's important too that you mentioned that Calgary doesn't have a permanent building right now. Not saying that you wouldn't have been able to do this if you didn't have a permanent building, or if you did have a permanent building, but the perspective that you have, because like you said, it does take a lot of resources. I mean, I've spent a lot of time fussing about the ins and outs of my church building in Salt Lake over the last few months, with various things going on. And if you're able to free yourself of some of that worry, whatever that looks like, I'm not saying get rid of your buildings or anything, but
totally. You know,
just ridding yourself of some of that burden. And sometimes that does mean changing locations, you know? Totally. So I think that that's a really interesting perspective to have, that because you're not weighed down by the ins and outs of a congregation, you're able to see outside of the congregation a little bit better.
Totally.
So I'm also curious to find out what your coworkers' reactions were when you first started. So like when you first had this idea of like, hey, I think my church is going to sponsor some breast pumps. I mean, what was that like? Because I'm assuming that was also kind of like, what? A church is going to?
Yeah. Yeah. What? So of course the question that comes up the most is, oh, what kind of church are you? And then you get into the whole community of Christ, like, it's difficult to explain what kind of a church you are, because then everyone's like, oh, so you're Mormon. You're like, well, no, but like, you know, like, everyone probably knows exactly what I'm talking about. So anyways, so once you kind of get past that, everyone was like, well, that's really cool that your church would do that. Like that, like, so did they come up with the idea? And I was like, no, I did, because I work here. But it was, yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about it all that much, because that part of it was so long ago. Like, that feels like it was such a long time ago now. But yeah, everybody was very interested in it. Really got a lot of the talk started. And then that kind of continued on with my ordination, because there were a few people that asked me after I got ordained to the office of priest. They're like, well, are you going to have to quit work now? And I said, what? They're like, well, you're ordained. Like, aren't you going to go work for your church? And I was like, no, it's kind of a volunteer gig. Like, it's not, I can't substitute it for my full-time job. But yeah, it definitely opened up some doors, and I think got some interest there, and also just got people thinking about things a little bit differently. And I've always tried to see my church as an asset and as a resource in my life. And I hope that it was kind of an inspiration for other people to look at their churches or their community supports in the same way of, like, you know, by myself, I certainly couldn't do this. Like, I don't have the capital to put into this. I don't have, you know, I'm lucky that I have my mom, that I can, like, pick her brain and all this kind of stuff. But, like, as a one woman show, I certainly could not do this. And so I really needed to rely on my church family to be able to do this and to make it what it has become. And so I think that that played into it as well. And then there were also the questions of, like, well, do the families have to be Christian to do the Mom Project? And I said, no, if they want to provide breast milk, that's all that needs to happen. So, you know, and I totally get it, because I am also very skeptical of lots of religious organizations, lots of organizations that are charities that are affiliated with certain religious organizations, which I won't name for controversy sake, but you know, I think that it's healthy for people to be skeptical and to ask those kinds of questions of, like, what is the goal, like, what is the real goal of your program, and, like, how are you ensuring that you're not discriminating against people and that you're really hitting the right target audience. And so then it was a really interesting experience for me to kind of be a little bit more vulnerable about that side of my life, because I don't share about it a lot. I think it's hard for people our age to talk a lot about our religious or spiritual side, because there are a lot of people our age who just flat out are not into that at all, right? And so then once you bring it up, then you're worried, oh, are people going to think I'm a Bible thumper or this, that, or the other? And it was a really cool opportunity for me to be like, nope, this is my church and I'm proud of it and we're doing something really cool. And, like, yeah, I am a Christian. I go to church. I do these things that maybe you don't think would necessarily go, because I don't know if anybody listening has had this experience, but, like, I've had several people say to me, like, oh, you're a Christian? And I'm like, yes? Like, what is it about me? Is it the purple hair? Is it the, like, you know, what is it about me that says that maybe I can't be Christian? But I think that that's an interesting thing, too, where people are like, oh, you live your life in a way that I wasn't expecting. Like, maybe that's because it's not so cookie cutter. Maybe it's because, you know, I'm willing to kind of challenge the status quo or whatever. I don't know what it is, but it was an interesting experience to kind of show people, like, yep, this is who I am and this is my church and I'm really proud of it and we did something really cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, I mentioned that I feel like you're kind of busting through stereotypes of, you know, the 30-ish year old crowd, millennials in the church, maybe, of whatever those stereotypes are. But then you're also busting through what people have in their head about Christians too. You know, you're not, yeah, quote unquote, that kind of Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really appreciate that. And I feel like you're just, you know, throwing surprises out there at every corner.
I try to keep things interesting.
So what can you tell us about some of the families that you guys have been able to provide pumps for? I mean, are there any stories that go along with it? I mean, or have you been, you know, have you interacted with the families one-on-one, face-to-face? Just what has that been like?
So we have some really, really great stories. We have a few really, really sad stories, of course. Whenever I tell someone that I work in the NICU, they always say, oh my gosh, that must be so hard. And I tell them the vast majority of our stories have happy endings. Most of our babies go home and they have loving families to go home to, and they are loved forever and ever. And maybe their life does have some sort of disability or complication from their stay in the NICU, but most of the time things are very, very happy. But then when it's sad, it's very sad. So the one story that always really sticks out to me was there was this baby, and of course things are more complicated too, because I have to, as the director of the Mom Project, I have to be completely unbiased and uninformed by what I know is going on the unit, even though I recognize these names and I see that they're in the NICU and I work with these parents' babies and things like that. And so sometimes I do the pump drop-offs. And so in that case, I always introduce myself and just say like, hey, I'm not following you onto the unit. I do work there, like, you know, but sometimes when I don't do the pump drop-offs, then I do have that bit of anonymity. And there was this one little boy, and he was born at 23 weeks, like just at the very cusp of being viable. And he was so, so sick right from the beginning. And he had many, many weeks of a very, very hard battle. And his parents just were so full of hope and so full of this belief that their little boy was going to get better. And so it was several, several weeks of a really, really hard fight. And he, unfortunately, in the end, couldn't win it. And so this was at the point where it was still just my mom and I doing the pickups and the drop-offs. And so I told my mom, like, this little boy has passed away. So I'm sure the family will be calling us in the next few days or a few weeks to return their pump. And I just wanted you to have the heads up. And my mom had the thought that she would go over there with a prayer shawl just in case. And of course, like, she went there acting like she didn't know anything, but I guess that the mom just opened the door and my mom said, how are things? And she just kind of shook her head. And then she spoke to my mom for a long time and they had a really good cry together. But what was so, so poignant about this story was this was a Buddhist family. And when they had their son cremated, he was wrapped in his blanket from the Mom Project. And that blanket was made by a member of our congregation who never met that family. And they only had a few, very few interactions with us. But that was when I kind of realized how important what we were doing was and how meaningful. Like, at first the blanket ministry, I was like, oh yeah, this is just a nice little add-on, like, you know, people are often so, and maybe you experience this with your twins too, people don't know how to respond when your babies are born prematurely. They're like, oh, congratulations, but like, are we sad too, or are we scared? Like, people don't know how to respond. And so I really thought that it would be nice for us to just respond normally, like, you had a baby, congratulations, we're giving you a gift, that's what normal people do when you have babies. But the way that I describe the blanket ministry part of it now is that that's really the heart of the Mom Project. Like, that's really where, that's where the moms often get the most teary. Like, we're giving them this machine so that they can provide their breast milk and all that kind of stuff. But they're like, you guys made me a baby blanket. Like, that's what they get so excited about and overwhelmed about, is just that we're showing that we care. So that's a sad story, but a very meaningful story. But we have so many moms that text us pictures like months after their babies have gone home. And they're like, look at how chubby they are. Look at how big they are. And my mom always loves to go. My mom always likes it when it's kind of the full circle, like when she does the pump drop off and then she goes back to do the pickup, because then oftentimes she'll get to see the baby afterwards. Because my mom never gets to see the babies like in the unit when they're so teeny tiny, right? But there was one mom, and she's just like the sweetest lady, this mom. She's so kind. She texted my mom, because she was the one who did her pump drop-off. She texted my mom a picture of her son when he was still in the NICU, because my mom had mentioned that she never gets to see these little guys when they're in the hospital. And so she texted her a picture of her little guy. And then when my mom went to do her pickup, she got to see this little guy now that he's all grown up and all better and all that kind of stuff. And she even got to hold him. And that was like the biggest deal for my mom. And I just have parents all the time send us emails with pictures and like the nicest things that these moms say about, like, I was at the worst moment in my life and your program was there and your people cared about me and you were just really there when I needed you. And it, being in the NICU as a healthcare professional puts you in a really unique place, because everybody has an interaction with the hospital at some point in their life. Like somebody breaks a leg or they need surgery or like you have a baby or whatever. But the NICU is one part of the hospital that nobody ever sees themselves being. Nobody prepares you. Like you don't go to your mom and baby class and they're like, okay, here's the statistics that you're going to go to the NICU. And like, here's what's going to happen. Like nothing can prepare you for that. And I'm sure you as a NICU mom, like you understand that, like you roll in there and you're like, what do you mean you're taking my babies away from me right now after I just had surgery or I just gave birth and like, and what? And now they're gone and my husband's going with them. And now I'm alone. Like, it's just a total, no matter if they're there for 24 hours or for 4 months, it's a complete interruption in the normal parenting process. And so you kind of get inserted into this moment in these parents' lives and a time in their life that they are so vulnerable. And a lot of our parents are first-time parents, and so they don't really even know how to take care of any baby, much less a premature sick baby with wires and tubes and drains and all that kind of stuff going on. And so you get bonded with the parents in a really different way than I think you do with a lot of other patient populations. And so to be in the Mom Project and to be involved in a different way, that's just in a, I'm here to support you and you're doing the right thing and like, it's all going to be okay, is really nice. Because sometimes when you're there as a nurse, you can't always say those things. Like you can't always say like, everything's going to be okay. Or, you know, it's, sometimes you spend almost too much time together with parents when they're there, when you're there for 12 hours a day and they're there for 12 hours a day, and like you can not get sick of each other, but you know, so it's nice with the Mom Project to just have this touch point of like, things are crazy right now, but like here's something to help you and like go off and do your thing. And then we'll meet back up when things are better in your life. And so that's, it's kind of a nice little bit of a break too.
As you're talking, I'm just thinking about my own experience, and not to make this about me, but I just want to again, you know, reiterate how meaningful this is, because I just remember when my girls were born, I feel like I had a little bit of heads up just because statistically twins are born early, but it still, no one could have prepared me for that. And I did end up having a C-section. So there was a real state of physical shock that I was in. And then, you know, I didn't get to see my babies for the first 10-ish hours just because I was stuck in the recovery room. And, you know, there's a lot of layers of emotion, and I wasn't able to breastfeed really. And so there's so many emotions and guilt. And like you said, it's just an interruption into the process that normally should just theoretically be pretty easy and smooth. And so to have somebody there that recognizes the need, you know, even one of the needs that new parents are facing, I think it's really, really significant. And I think it's, again, really cool that it's coming from a church and from a minister. And so there's that whole pastoral aspect of it as well. Whether the people, you know, whether or not all the people that are providing the pumps and the service are religious or not, that's the undertone that started the whole thing, which I find really inspiring.
And it's interesting that you bring up the pastoral element, because my mom is an elder in the church, and she was doing a drop-off for a family. They were originally from Africa. I don't remember what region, but my mom ended up giving a ride to the father back to the hospital, because she lives very close to the children's hospital, which is where their baby was. And over the course of this car ride, they got onto the topic of this gentleman was explaining that in their culture, they have a word for wise older women in the community, and they call them amas. And when my mom was leaving, he said, "Thank you, ama." And my mom just thought that that was the coolest thing to be like recognized in that way. And so I think that the pastoral opportunities there and like the ministerial opportunities, like not everybody would describe it that way. Certainly, like for instance, my friend Michelle, she does a ton of our drop-offs, and she's on the Ohana Support Foundation board as well, but she's not religious in any way. I'm the most religious friend that she has, and she says that I'm not like any religious person she's ever met, so I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but anyways, you know, she probably wouldn't describe it as providing a ministry or as being pastoral or anything like that, but she's doing, she might describe it as doing a service or being being helpful, being kind, things like that. And so I think that we our language is just different. We're saying the same things, but I think that our language is just different. And I think that that's something important too when you're trying to blend that that kind of churchy religious aspect of it to trying to do something good in the world, is being conscientious of that language. And like, you know, the tie-ins for people from Community of Christ talking about it being pastoral and ministerial and those kind of things are super important, but then it's also super important to talk about it in terms of paying it forward and being generous and being kind and building capacity, empowering women, things like that, using those words for people kind of outside of that sphere too. So it's been really interesting to experience kind of both sides of it too.
Yeah, I think that it's really easy to get caught up in church speak, if you will. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, in Community of Christ, like I've only been around for 5 years, but I'm alarmed at how quickly I latched on to Community of Christ speak, yep. If you will. We kind of have our own little quirky language. And, you know, I work with a lot of Latter-day Seekers, and I have to catch myself at times because I will just say something that a Community of Christ person will understand, or I describe myself in a way that would make sense to a Community of Christ person. I was actually just writing a little bio for myself for an upcoming retreat, and the person that I sent it to for review, she's like, "This is great if you're talking to a Community of Christ people, but this isn't a retreat for Community of Christ." So, it was pretty funny. So yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, because the way that we as individuals and congregations interact with the world, if we're still stuck in our own frame of mind or our own worldview, and we're just assuming that everyone knows what's happening or what's going on, there miscommunication can happen, or people can be really turned off if it sounds too churchy, too Christian, too whatever, because it's that type of Christian, church or individual that they might be worried about. So, just to make it a little more universalist, I guess, is really important.
Yeah.
So I just want to get some of your thoughts on the relevance of church, of Christian community in the world today. I mean, has this project kind of changed the way you see mission in the church, or the potential of mission, or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that the Mom Project has proven to me that the church can go, or the church can do the things that I hope it would do and that I think it should be doing. I think that for me, and maybe people of my age, it's been difficult to really kind of lean into what I think that the church can be, and to trust that I'm doing the right thing and that I'm thinking the right way, because I think that it's really easy to see people of a different generation or of a different background and be like, oh, they're not going to see it my way. They're not going to have my same values. You know, things like that. And there's been a few issues in my lifetime. And I mean, even in my parents' lifetime, where there have been things that people of a younger generation haven't necessarily agreed with the older generation about. I think we can all think of a few topics there. But having something like the Mom Project, where it's like, this is my really weird little niche idea, and I don't know where else it has a home, but I think that it really fits with what we should be doing, what we can be doing. And I was really pleasantly surprised to have it get such a warm welcome from Calgary. And then the response from all of Community of Christ has been insane. Like, I remember when we had our very first Facebook post about it from Community of Christ Calgary, and I had just written my very first blog about it, and it was featured on like the official Community of Christ Instagram and their Facebook page, and it was like, it was all of a sudden just everywhere, and everybody knew about it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So then to have that happen as well, I thought was just crazy. Like, I thought that that was just insane. And it was really affirming, because I think that a lot of people my age have heard, you know, like, you will hear the call, but maybe it's not where you think it's coming from, or maybe it's not in the direction that you expected, or, it might feel scary, right? I think that's a huge theme in Christianity, that when the call comes, it's going to be scary and you just have to persevere anyways. And I think that people of our generation sometimes are a bit more skeptical, because we've seen people, you know, justify lots of things because they thought that they were called to do it, or they have burned themselves out because they felt that they were called to do that. So I think that when we're confronted with that, we're always a little bit skeptical and like, is this really what I should be doing? But this is something that I feel so strongly about. And it's funny, because people will ask me like, well, do you have kids? Like, have you ever used a breast pump? No. So I'm really just like, I'm really an outsider looking in on this issue and thinking that I have a way to help and to fix it. And I was really empowered to do that through my congregation. And I think that the importance of congregations, and I think the importance of church in general, is to provide opportunities for community, for people, provide opportunities to come together as like-minded, like-hearted people. And if we are joined together by causes and by things that light the fire in our hearts, I think that that's just as good a reason as any to be together. It's interesting, because my husband was not raised religious. He had a little bit of Anglican when he was younger, but he's not really participated in church. And so the ways that we understand social supports and social networks and things like that, and community in general, are so different. You know, I know that at any given moment, if my entire world were to collapse around me, I still have a group of, well, my immediate group of my congregation, I have at least 30 people that I know would put Tanner and I in their home, and they would feed us and they would help us in any way that they could. And if I happen to be in Australia, I know people that I can call. If I was in the States, I know people I can call. If I was in Ontario, I know people I can call. You know, like, that it just goes, it expands beyond that. And I think that a lot of people really need that. And a lot of people really want for that. And they strive for that, but they don't necessarily know where to find it. And I think a lot of millennials, we find it in our friend group. Like, a lot of us talk about, you know, you don't get to pick your birth family, but you get to pick your own family. And I'm really big on that as well. But I do think that congregations just do it in a different way, because you didn't necessarily all choose to be together. It's kind of like this in-between family, where like some people you hang out with more often than others, but you still have to get along with your crazy Aunt Sally. And, you know, like, it's this interesting mix of you're together because you choose to be, but at the same time, like, you wouldn't necessarily have chosen all of these people if you could, but somehow you still make it work and you work through that. And also just being part of the Calgary congregation, like I said before, with us not having a building and going through that whole process, I'm so proud of our group and how we moved through that, because that was a really painful, really long process. But we have all come through it, and we see our congregation, we see each other, we see our group and our mission completely differently. And I don't think that we ever would have gotten there if we were still staying in that comfortable place. So I think that congregational life is changing, but I also think that there are some things that are traditional that are probably always going to stay the same. I think that we're probably always going to be talking after church for just as long as we were actually in the service. I don't think that that's going to change. I don't think that potlucks on Sunday are ever going to change. And I hope that those things don't change. I think that congregations are really good anchoring points for people to connect people, and then where the impact of those connections kind of like feathers out into the world. I think that that's really interesting. Like, the anchor point is cool, but then how each person kind of chooses to echo out into the bigger world is really neat, is really compelling.
You are really speaking to the sociologist in me. That's what I got my undergrad in. And honestly, when I think about this question of what's the point of church, a lot of my response is grounded in sociology. So I feel like you're hitting on all the things that I generally say, or, you know, what I believe, that congregations really do provide such a good, important social structure, you know, social infrastructure in the community. And so what you're doing, I feel like, is ideal, because you have a congregation that you're fellowshipping with, worshiping with, mingling with, but then you've used that social network that you've created to then attach yourself to another institution, you know, the medical field, and respond to a need that is particular to that context. And then you did something about it, and you've done awesome things about it, and it's grown. And I don't know. I keep saying I'm stunned, but I'm kind of stunned.
Well, thanks. That's very kind. Like, I also kind of surprise myself sometimes, because I'm very much one of those ADHD people that's like, I'll start a million projects and then never finish one of them. So the fact that, like, I've started this and it's actually become its own thing, and now it's kind of this little engine that just keeps going on its own, like, that's a big deal for me too, because I'm usually like a big idea person, and I like making all the pretty plans and the lists and buying all the stuff and whatever, but then actually getting it going is tricky. But I mean, I guess what I would also like to say to anybody is, if you see a need out there and you think that you could do something about it, even if it's just you and a small group of other people, like, just go do it. Go try. Like, you don't know what you can accomplish until you actually try. And maybe somebody else out there has been thinking about the exact same thing as you, but you didn't know it until you started talking about it. Like, just get out there and do something. I think that, like, I get to also talk about this for days, but I think that we're in a world where we're all talking too much about stuff and we're not doing enough about it. So if it's something that you're talking about all the time and it just makes you like so crazy because nobody's doing anything about it, maybe that's because you're supposed to be doing something about it.
That's actually a really good insight. And I feel like something that a lot of church communities struggle with. I mean, I know my congregation, we have a ton of big ideas, but then the follow through, and I'm just as guilty as the next person. It's like, hard. Oh, we had this idea and we had this thing, and then we didn't do the thing. And why didn't we do the thing? And oh, we should do the thing.
Yeah. And that's so true. Congregational life can be exhausting, and burnout in Community of Christ, I think in any volunteer organization, volunteer burnout is huge and it's real. And I think that one really easy way to combat volunteer fatigue and burnout is to just do something that you really like. So, you know, if you haven't done it, like, I'm not saying that your local congregation doesn't have ideas that shouldn't get done, but like, if something's not happening, like, maybe try something else. Or maybe, like, you know, things things like that. I think that we get really attached to the things that we should be doing. And then when you find something that you're super passionate and gung-ho about, you're just like, oh yeah. And then it doesn't feel so much like work because you know what you're doing. And like the Calgary congregation, I think anybody would tell you, we used to be like the poster child of go big or go home, you know, the neighborhood carnival with like all the bells and whistles and games and food and like all this kind of stuff. And that sort of stuff gets really exhausting. And so if you do things that are smaller and more meaningful and like slower and grow over time, I think that that's a lot more sustainable than trying to do anything that's huge, especially when you don't have a ton of hands. But then when people see that you're doing something small and meaningful and they're like, oh, this is only like 2 hours a week, okay, like I could do that or whatever, then people I think are a bit more willing to get back on board. But it's hard when you're trying to do so much because people have such great ideas and everybody wants to make things better. But yeah, it's hard to start. It's hard to start for sure.
Yeah. But like I keep saying, I'm just really grateful that you took this idea and ran with it and had the support of your congregation and the support of your work and that you've created what you've created. I mean, that is something to be proud of. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I, as a typical overachiever, I'm like, oh, well, you know, it could be better, but I was doing, I hope everyone on the show is familiar with Marie Kondo and KonMari-ing your life and everything like that. So I was doing my papers and, I had a whole file folder of all the old Mom Project stuff because we do everything electronically now. But when we were first starting out, everything was on paper. And I was looking through all of these papers and that was the moment where I actually felt like deep in my guts felt really proud of myself because I was like, I built this. Like I built this from absolutely nothing. And that's not to say that I don't have like the feel good fuzzies about the project and things like that, but I do have a hard time feeling like genuine pride a lot of the time. But that was the moment where I was like, holy crap, I really built this from nothing. Like I invented like a whole new category of nonprofits. Like that, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only person in the entire world, but you know what I mean? Like that was a big moment. So thank you, Marie Kondo, for that.
No, I love it. I love when you have those moments where you're like, you know, I'm not half bad right now.
Yeah.
Actually, okay. Pat yourself on the back. Every once in a while I have those moments and I'm like, huh. But then, you know, it's always followed by like weeks of self-doubt and whatever.
Totally.
And every once in a while it's like, man, okay, you did that all right. Good job.
you did a solid like 9 out of 10 on that. Nice work.
Oh man. So is there anything else that you want to leave us with? Any other last thoughts to wrap us up or?
I guess that if anybody's looking to find out more information on the Mom Project, you can check out our webpage, which is momproject.ca. So it's momproject.ca. We are also on Facebook at the Mom Mother's Own Milk Project. So you can find us there and check us out. We are growing slowly but surely. If you're in the Calgary area, we would love to hear from you because we always need more volunteers. But we just really love to connect with people and even hearing your story, Brittany, and like we just love to hear the people that this is important to because it's not like cancer, it's not like diabetes, it's not like poverty in its clearest form where it's touched everybody's lives. Like this is something where not everybody has a story about it, but the people that do have a connection to it, it's a really heartfelt connection. And so I just really love connecting with people, you know, whether or not they ever become a part of the program, like just hearing people's stories and even just opening that door. Well, I guess that's one more thing that was so unexpected was women in my congregation who are at least a generation older than me were then talking to me about like their breastfeeding struggles when they were young moms, like decades ago, right? Just like opening these doors. And so, so you can check us out on there. You can connect with us there and just know that there's always something that you can do to help somebody else, there's always a way that you can lend your voice or lend your hand. And I'm just really grateful for this little church that I was born into. I know there are lots of people that are stumbling upon it now or trying very hard to get into it now. And I think that that's really great because I grew up in this church and I was very confident that I was part of something that was great, but it's really cool to live in a time where there are lots of people who are seeing that as well. And I'm super encouraged and excited to see what the next 10 or 15 years of the church are going to look like, because I think that we're in for some really dynamic shifts and I think it's going to be really great.
I think so too. It'll be a ride and I'm grateful to be on the roller coaster with you.
Yeah. Woo!
And I did want to mention that I will find all of the links and your social media platforms and stuff and post them in the show notes for sure. Awesome. One thing I did want to ask though, is if people want to, is there a way for people to donate or is there, I mean, is that just part of the come check us out?
Yes. So the tricky thing about being small is that we are not a registered charity as of yet, because the taxing stuff is just way too complicated for our little like 15-person operation. So we can't do tax receipts, but there are ways that you can donate to us. If you're in Canada, you can do email money transfers. So if you contact us by any of our social medias or anything, we can get you set up with that. We can also accept cash or check. So just contact us on one of our social medias or through our website, and we will be able to connect you that way. But we are happy to even have donations of blankies. Like, you don't even have to give us your money. We just like blankies or your time or your stories or just whatever, because we're just grateful for all of it. But any financial support would be 100% going into the program, because we are all volunteer run, so you're not paying anybody to do anything. Everything is going directly to our moms and to our babies.
That's amazing. Like I said, we're going to put all the links in the show notes so people can.
Fabulous.
Yay. Thank you so much for coming on. Like I think I said at the beginning, as soon as I connected the dots that you were the one behind this, I thought, what? How did I not realize this? And we've got to get her on the podcast. And so I immediately sent an email and now we're here. So I'm really, really grateful that you were able to come on and share your story with Project Zion.
Well, thank you so much. And like I said, it's been a huge fangirl dream of mine. So I'm so stoked to be on the podcast. And who knows, maybe we'll be able to do it again sometime.
I was just going to invite you that we could do it again. We can have a whole series on chats with it. Caitlin.
Yeah. We have to work coffee in there somehow. So we'll figure it out. We'll keep you guys posted.
Totally.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.